coming. I'm declaring the meeting open at 5:31. Item number two on the agenda, acknowledgement of country. We acknowledge the cultural custodians of the land, the Kanyang, Pibulmin and Wurundjeri people. We acknowledge and support their continuing connection to the land, waterways and community. We pay our respects to members of the Aboriginal communities and their culture, and to elders past and present, their descendants still with us today, and those who will follow in their footsteps. Item number three on the agenda, attendance, apologies and leaves of the absence. CEO?
We have an apology from Councillor Pearce.
Thank you, CEO. Item number four on the agenda, attendance of gallery. To our community in the gallery, thank you for attending. I request you to place your names on the attendance sheet on the table at the entrance to the chambers if you have not done so already. Item number five on the agenda, response to previous questions on notice. CEO?
There are none other than one that was taken at the electors meeting from Mr. Bevington regarding the way that the contingent liabilities note in the annual report was structured, and I think Director Radford has a response to that.
Thank you, CEO. I have investigated the change that Mr. Bevington brought to our attention. It appears that there has been a formatting wrapping error on the PDF version of the 23-24 annual report, which cut off the last of the contingent liability for the town square. I can confirm that there has been no change between 23-24 and 24-25 for contingent liabilities.
Thank you for that. I'll now move on to item number six, public question time. I'm just going to read out quickly from policy G6, public question time. So on behalf of council and presiding members, we'll not admit inappropriate questions, including but not limited to defamatory remarks, offensive language, matters of the personal affairs or actions of councillors or employees, confidential information, statements disguised as questions, legal advice or proceedings or processes, and questions that have previously been answered. So I'll commence public question time at 5:35. If you have a question, just move up to the microphone, please.
Bruce Bevington, Cabinet Road, Sunnyside. Regarding the response on page 23 under 18.1, where it said current officers are not aware of the project being the redevelopment of Steer Street, Stewart Lane, the civic car park. Can you explain what the process is for something to be incorporated in the budget? Since this item is in the current budget, as well as last year's budget, is listed in the text as one of the projects of work that needs doing, how does an item get to the stage of being in the budget when additionally two of the officers, being Messrs. Guthridge and Gillam, responded to questions at a meeting May last year on the subject? How is it that the officers don't know about a project that's in the budget when they've answered questions on it, and who are the officers that perhaps would be appropriate to know about roadworks in the Shire?
CEO?
I'll pass that over to Director Gillam.
Through the Chair, I haven't answered any questions relating to Steer Street Works, I'm afraid. I haven't received any questions on it either.
Thank you, Mr. Gillam. Is there any further questions?
The question also referred to how does it get to the budget? That was a second part of the same question, and there was no answer to that.
CEO?
So if there's an item in the budget, then it would have been flagged as a project. I'm not sure exactly how much was put into the budget this year, but it may not have been the works that you're referring to with regard to the total project that was previously flagged. I know some time ago there was some there was a project that was flagged and some money was put into the budget, but I don't think that project was ever fully scoped or fully costed. So I'm not sure what item you're referring to in the budget that refers to that, but Mr. Gillam may be able to assist.
Through the Chair, there is in fact a $40,000 materials and contracts budget for Steer Street improvements. I'm sorry, I just wasn't aware of that project.
Thank you, CEO. Any further questions?
In relation to the new document that's on the website, which has replaced the rolling action sheet, council resolutions document, which apparently has been prepared by the governance officer, and at the electors meeting the CEO said it would, what it would contain, including if an item is in progress, that there's progress on it. Can you explain why the document for the last, from December 2024, has every single council resolution as being complete? There is not one item that is still in progress, and how it has been determined that two particular items, Local Planning Scheme 6 has been re-advertised subsequent to the September 3rd special council meeting and has been approved, brought back to council and approved as per that sheet, and how Councillor Fletcher's resolution about the signage, which was to be have a report done and returned to council, how that has been completed when it hasn't been returned to council.
Thank you, Mr. Bevington. That's an observation that I also recognised. CEO?
Yeah, I'll take that on notice because my understanding was that they weren't all listed as complete. There were some that were in progress. So if it's gone up with them all complete, then that's clearly not correct. There were clearly some that were listed as in progress. And then we were also going to add some more detail around what actions were going to be taken, what actions had been taken on those particular resolutions. So if it's gone up with that, then we will look into it and make sure that it's fixed up accordingly.
Thank you, CEO. Any further questions?
In relation to the item on the about the electors meeting, which I think is 18.1, is it possible for each of those resolutions to be referred to individually and voted on by councillor rather than being on block for the whole report so that each item could be discussed?
I think I know the answer to this, but I'll ask the CEO to respond.
So you'll note that the recommendation is that council notes the decisions made at the 2026 general electors meeting held on Thursday 5th of February as outlined in the body of the report. Council don't vote on each individual motion. Council's required to consider each individual motion. If council wants to do something with each of those, any or all of those motions, then a councillor would have to move a separate motion. Usually it would occur via a notice of motion at a future meeting to do something that relates to that particular motion. So motions are moved and passed, moved, seconded and passed at the electors meeting. They come to council for consideration. Council's role is to consider whether to do anything with them or not. We provide, as the administration, we provide some advice on what we think should be done or not done in accordance with those motions. It's up to council then to decide whether they want to take it further, and usually that would be, as I said, via a motion from a councillor to do something with a particular one of those.
Thank you, CEO. Any further questions? Mr. Bevington?
Also in relation to the items from the annual electors meeting in relation to the contaminated sites issue, noting that the response, the question taken on notice, was not put in the minutes and has not been referred to in the officer comment. Why is there no reference in the officer report on a motion that referred to the contaminated sites, and specifically I referred in my comments about the development of the civic area, being the tourist bureau, the car parks, the camping area, the area the children were planting the plants in the landscaping project, why there is no reference to that contaminated site, and why there is no reference to the fact that in the area on the hill, it related to the 2022 fire and the contaminant potential from the timber treater site, which is why it was put on, and Mr. Gillam is the one who has given that answer to council in the debate. Why there's no reference to the 2022 memorial, the fire, or anything to do with that, and yet council are being asked to accept the officer comments.
CEO?
So, Mr. Bevington, some of that which you just said may have been contained in the statements you made at the electors meeting. The actual motion was that in relation to the contingent liabilities in the annual report and in the interest of public safety and work safe requirements, the Shire undertakes testing of all sites accessed by the public and Shire staff, with a report to be presented back to council at or by June 26 ordinary council meeting. So we have structured a response, an advice to council based on what was contained within the motion. You've asked some further questions on it. We can answer those questions via the normal process, but our response is structured around the whole issue of how those contingent liabilities are managed, and it's no different to other local governments, and it's all in accordance with the Department of Water and Environmental Regulation. So that was what the intent of our comments were. If you have issues around a particular site, then we can address those questions separately.
Thank you, CEO. Any further questions? Mr. Bevington?
In relation to that last question and the response, the motion actually says, in the interest of public safety and work safe requirements, the Shire undertakes testing of all sites accessed by the public and Shire staff that are contained in that contingency list. All sites, not those which the Shire has already developed without going to DWIRT. So can, in order to respond to that motion, can we have an officer report presented to council which refers to the motion which requests in a report on all contaminated sites? And I actually did give an exclusion that I wasn't as concerned about Sunnyside Reserve where the tip was because it's now vegetated, and yet you referred to Sunnyside. However, there has been an asbestos scare since then, and also referred to the Yornup tip site that I wasn't concerned because it's not an area the public go to, the old tip at Yornup. So why can't the motion be addressed in the officer report, which says it wants a report on all sites, not just the ones the Shire doesn't want to reveal it has developed contrary to the Act?
Would you like to respond to that, CEO?
So I think my previous answer already responded to it. Our response addresses how we manage those particular sites at this particular moment in time. And as I said, it's no different to how anyone else manages those sites in local government, I wouldn't think. However, if there is particular questions around the development, and I'm assuming you are referring to the development of the visitor centre up on the railway corridor there, we can respond to particular questions around that, but probably not at this particular time. We'll have to take them on notice.
Thank you, CEO. Any further questions? There's 2 minutes remaining in question time. There being no further questions, we'll move on to item 7. On the agenda, petitions, deputations and presentations. Have we received any requests, CEO?
Not that I'm aware of.
Item 8 on the agenda, comments on agenda items by parties with an interest. I've been approached by Mr. Beddington, who'd like to speak on a couple of matters that are on tonight's agenda. Mr. Beddington?
If you can give me a warning. So the first item I wish to do comment on the agenda is 18.1, which is the motions from the annual electors meeting. As an interested party, as the mover of the four motions, starting on page 19, on page 20 actually, the first of my motions, it was in relation to the local planning scheme 6. Now, I specifically asked in the motion that certain things be done which were not done in the original consultation. It is a requirement of the Town Planning and Development Act that the Shire is to make the information available up until the council meeting. That did not happen last time. It is not in the motion for September the 3rd. All the September 3rd motion refers to is that it is to be re-advertised in accordance with the Act. The response they've got here says, but we are going to notify those people individually in the water catchment area. They weren't notified in the previous time, which is a requirement of the Act. Why are they being done now? And there is no council resolution that says that to be done. That has been added. There is no reason why these things are not done, that people who are being impacted by a change to a scheme, which is apparently only an administrative change, why the Shire is not prepared to let the community know what is happening to their properties. That is why, councillors, I would like this motion to be supported. After all, asking to do exactly what is in the Act should not require a motion. And also they refer to having the maps on display. We don't want the standard document they produce. We want the full maps, and also my motion asks for the maps that currently exist for schemes 3 and 4 so people can see what the changes are. They are not indicating they're going to do that. That needs to happen. In relation to the contaminated sites, In the first paragraph, it outlines in the response that they what has to happen before any development can occur on the land. All that land that, because I actually have asked, can we have a map so I know exactly what area you're talking about. So, the redevelopment of the tourist venture, railway station, the car parks, the crossover, the community organic garden, the shed that's just been approved by the Shire to be built on the site, the car park and the approval of the car park that's used for the short stay accommodation. These are all developments that required approval. Unless, of course, the Shire didn't give approval for the construction of the shed or of there was no approval needed to build a car park. They've actually said in their document, before they do any development, they have to get the land cleared of the contaminants. They have not done that. The report says they're supposed to do that. The response that was given on the night said, we don't have a choice, but they've not done it. So that is why it should have been responded, all of the sites. Now, I'm concerned. Now, they made no reference to the fact that the, as Mr. Gillam said, they found out about the thing, about the memorial, because it impacted on the ability to develop the Shire Depot. And he actually himself said it was placed after the 2022 fire. And yet this report makes no reference to 2022 fire. It goes back to 1966 and say there's no dirt. I'm not talking about 1966. I'm talking about the danger that was highlighted in 2022, which is why the restriction was placed then. And I'm also talking about the fact that the Shire has redeveloped land, which it keeps saying it requires approval before it can do that, that it's clearance of the site, and it hasn't done that. That's why I want that motion supported to be looked at properly, and the motion says all sites, not just the ones the Shire wants you to know about.
Thank you, Mr. Bevington. Now, Mr. Bevington, you said that you were also interested to speak to item 19.1 on the agenda. So you've spoken to item 18.1, and you indicated to me that you would be speaking to 19.3, sorry, Mr. Bevington.
19.3 is relation to the town planning scheme, local planning scheme 6. It's good if they've picked up that there's another mistake in the document and they want it fixed up. But firstly, the Act doesn't allow them to come back to you a second time. The Act is quite specific. You advertise, you have a time frame within which you have to present it to council, which they did not comply with. And they did not get extensions from the department. You then put it to council with as it is, with modifications, and council is then to determine whether it is or isn't to be advertised. There is no additional advertising permitted under the Act, but they want to do that. But then that would mean complying with the Act. Bearing in mind that in this rolling action sheet, what it's called now, the local planning scheme is complete. It has been advertised a second time and it's come back to council. How inaccurate do we have to have Shire documents? We're talking about the most important document the Shire has, the planning scheme. Now, in relation to this water issue, on the September 3rd special council meeting, which is after I met with the CEO and the town planner, at which that was acknowledged by Mr. Guthridge that for the water area and the matters to do with the R-code changes in the commercial area in town, the Shire had a requirement to individually notify those people, and yet nothing happened. That should have been done already, and it should. And they still are not complying with that requirement for the amendment to the scheme which creates the R30 in the main street. In relation also on that night, they had, not only did they have the town planner, we had a consultant town planner who spent most of that meeting arguing that I was wrong. Of course I'm wrong, what do I know? that this only applied to major developments. If you look at this document that's in front of you...
Mr. Beddington, you seem to be deviating from 19.1. Would you stay on form, please?
Well, 19.3 is the proposal to do the amendment. Now, they're saying that in that text it reiterates all developments, and yet they spent the whole night, including a consultant town planner, trying to tell council, put it through, because it only affected certain applicants. It affects every applicant.
Mr. Beddington, would you please stick to the matter, 19.3, please?
Isn't 19.3 Local Planning Scheme 6? It is Local Planning Scheme 6. Is, and the issue is that this amendment... I've been interrupted a few times. This amendment refers different to what the staff were saying on the night. It also gives scope that only the things which the Shire officers say needs approval. The motion, the wording should, if anything, should say that any planning application, anything that needs planning approval within these special SCA areas requires to be put to council. That is an integral change that needs to be done so that it cannot be left to offer discretion whether developments in an area which the document says all development applications. So in other words, they can say a single house or a single shed under town planning scheme policy that gives the exemption.
Thank you, Mr. Beddington. You've had your time. Is there any further comments on agenda items by parties with an interest? That being the case, I'll go on to item 9 on the agenda, application for leave of absence. Has there been any applications for leave, CEO?
Not that I'm aware of.
So before I move on to item 10 on the agenda, confirmation of minutes, I'd like to move a motion to suspend clause 19.1 of the standing orders local law, members to rise. So that clause says any member of the council wishing to speak is to indicate by raising a hand. Now, I don't want to suspend that, but part I'd like to suspend it is that when invited by the presiding member to speak, members are to rise and address the council through the presiding member. So I'd like to suspend that clause. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Gillies. My reasoning for wishing to suspend that clause is that with the new audio system and recording system, to stand away from the microphone would be more of a detriment than, you know. So I just feel that if councillors were to remain seated and speak into the microphone, that would be beneficial with regards to the recording and for the public as well. Is there anyone who'd like to speak against that motion? If no one would like to speak against it, I'll move the motion. All those in favour? Thank you, councillors. Move on to item 10 on the agenda, confirmation of minutes. Item 10.1, confirmation of minutes, the ordinary meeting of council, 17th of December 2025. I call for someone to move that the minutes a true and accurate. Councillor Pratico.
I move to confirm the minutes of the ordinary meeting of council on the 17th of December 2025.
Thank you, Councillor. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Gillies. Would you like to speak to your motion, Councillor Pratico?
No, thanks.
Councillor Gillies?
No, thank you.
Is there anyone who'd like to speak against the motion? That being the case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Unanimous, thank you. Item 10.2, confirmation of minutes of special council meeting, 10th of February 2026. I call for someone to move that the minutes are a true and accurate record. Do I have a mover? Councillor Fletcher.
Okay, would you like the motion repeated? I move the motion that the minutes of the special council meeting held on the 10th of February 2026 be confirmed as a true, accurate record.
Thank you, Councillor. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Pratico. Councillor Fletcher, would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thanks.
Councillor Pratico.
No, thanks.
Is there anyone who'd like to speak against the motion? That being the case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Unanimous. Thank you, councillors. I'll now move on to item 11 on the agenda, announcements by the presiding member without discussion. CEO and I have had a bit of a busy time over the last couple of months. On the 14th of January, CEO and I met with Mr. Bevan Eats, MLA, Shadow Minister for Forestry and Aged Care, it was very much an informal meeting. It was the first time I was able to meet with Mr. Eats. But in the meeting, we did cover some ground. In particular, the Shadow Minister is particularly interested in the fact that with regards to safe houses or accommodation for safe housing in his electorate is there's a very much a shortfall for those people who are at risk of domestic violence. So there was quite a deal of discussion around how the district might advocate and explore ways of looking at finding a solution to the shortfall. Another area that was touched on was the proliferation of Airbnbs in the region, and it became apparent that there's some 2,000 Airbnbs in Busselton, for example, compared with over 100 in the Shire of Bridgetown. So housing is certainly on Mr. Eats's agenda. On the 20th of January, I attended Taliesin's stakeholder committee meeting, which was also attended by Mr. Rob Telford, who's the CEO of Telesyn. At the committee meeting, attendees were updated on the greater than 120 decibel blast that occurred on the 11th of January. There was quite a great deal of technical information provided to the attendees about the causes, the impacts on the community, and mitigation steps that will be taken by Telesyn going forward. At the meeting, CEO of Telesyn also touched on what was called Telesyn's collaborative long-term planning program and priorities going forward, these being community livability and well-being, land use compatibility and inclusive collaboration. On the 26th of January, we had the Australian Day celebrations, celebrating the 2025 citizenships of some 9 new Australians. We also celebrated the Shire's very wonderful Citizen of the Year, Dr. Sarah Youngson, and the very wonderful active citizen group of the year, the Rotary Club of Bridgetown. Once again, congratulations to those worthy 2025 recipients. On the 4th of February, Councillor Boyle, Councillor Gillies, and Councillor Lansdell, and the CEO and I attended the Orchard Museum opening. I will inform you that the exhibitions were wonderful, extremely interesting, and that opening was extremely well attended. So, on the 10th of February, the CEO and I attended the Warren Blackwood Alliance of Council board meeting in Manjimup. The focal point of the meeting, I would say, and this has been a focal point through December through to February, was the forestry products rates issue, and that being that rates issued to forestry products are actually being paid to the Office of the State Revenue rather than back to the shires that issue the rates notices. So some of you will probably have noticed that there's been quite a good media response to this matter, and that was a key matter for that meeting on the 10th. On the 17th of February, I attended, along with Councillor Fletcher, the Local Emergency Management Committee meeting, and I'm very pleased to tell you that Councillor Fletcher was nominated for presiding member to that committee. Councillor Fletcher presided at the meeting and did a great job. On the 20th of February, CEO and I attended the Wolga Zone meeting at Busselton, at which there was a number of presentations, and a couple that stood out for me was one by West Australian Police Superintendent, Mr. Paul Van Noort. And Mr. Van Noort gave a very detailed overview of the types of crimes that the police force deals with, and the statistics, and what we learnt from that was the very encouraging narrative that there has been a what appeared to be a substantial decrease in crime in the southwest of Western Australia. Another presentation that I really paid attention to was one by the Walga president, Councillor Karen Chappell, and it was her concluding remark that really caught my attention. Now, Councillor Chappell, her term will conclude on or around the 6th of March, and her concluding remark was that she felt that it's time for councils to have some serious conversations. That's as much as Councillor Chappell said, but I kind of inferred from that comment that the councillor was talking about amalgamations. The council should be having some serious conversations around amalgamation. On the 23rd of February, the CEO and I attended a second Warren Blackwood Alliance of Council board meeting here at the Shire. And at that meeting, the focus of that meeting was more to do with housekeeping and just setting some sites for how we would see the administration of the Alliance going forward. On the 25th of February, along with the CEO, a number of staff and several councillors, I attended Taliesin's tour of the mine site at Greenbushes. And that pretty much brings everyone up to date. I'll move on to item 12 on the agenda, notification of disclosures of interest. Do we have any notices, notifications, CEO?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you. Item 13. On the agenda, questions on agenda items by elected members. Do we have any questions? Councillor Gillies.
I actually have four questions. Are you happy for me to just run through them?
Yes, please.
Okay, the first one is directed to the CEO. It's to do with the execution of document policy. Whilst I understand that we're not required, or it's not strictly required, to have a register for the Category 2 documents, is that something that would benefit both, I know it would benefit council, but would it benefit administration?
I'm not sure that there would be any disbenefit to doing it, so... if it's to the benefit of council, we can maintain a register for that.
Thank you. My second question is to do with the feedback policy, the fact that we're being asked to revoke the feedback policy. I'm interested to know what the current complaint handling arrangements are in place.
So probably best that... And the Manager of Executive Services answers that one.
Thank you.
Currently we accept complaints or customer feedback through the website, through the customer service request form. We also accept them over in person by the customer services department. They can come in through mail and also through the BTN email inbox. So all of those things are available for anybody to give us any feedback. They can also ring us up at any time, and we take any complaint or compliment seriously, and it is recorded and follow up and investigated if necessary. And we're currently creating a customer charter so that, and the framework that will be built around that will also include a customer feedback framework and structure, so that that will be formalised.
Thank you. My third question is to Director Guthridge regarding the local road, Sawyer Road, and the, just the change that's being proposed. I'm just wanting to understand about how we're going to manage expectations, given that we've said that in the report it's saying that there'll be a rudimentary sort of looking after, but obviously with time and use and people's expectations, there might be required to do more than just a bit of a scrape over once a year. So I'm just interested to know that.
Thanks for the question. So if and when the dedication process is complete, and that normally takes probably a few years after that process is concluded, how it would be managed would be like every other local road. It'd be fair to say there might be pressures to do extra amount of maintenance or upgrade the road, but our works team and decision makers would normally base that on programs on how they allocate resources to their road network.
Okay, thank you. And the my second question is around the water, and I'm just interested to know that with this change of that text, how it's going to impact the current landholders.
Yeah, so it basically, how it works generally is if there is a requirement for a development application in that precinct, and whatever that application is, if it's of a higher intense or potential to pollute, the intention would be to refer it to DWER for their comments, and before the local government would make a decision on development approval, taking into account their referral advice, which may formulate a conditional approval. That's how it works generally at that level.
Okay, can I just ask a supplementary question to that? Is that actually happening now?
It happens now. We do internally when we get a application for something that's maybe within or without the that special control area. If it's got the potential to create nuisance or pollute, we would refer it to the relevant government agencies.
Thank you.
We have a policy on extractive industries, for example, that advocates a referral to that agency.
Thank you.
I have a quick question for the CEO. Again, it's on the execution of documents policy or proposed policy. The CEO could give council an indication of how many category 2 documents the Shire is likely to execute in any typical year.
There's not. Compared to a lot of other local governments, there's not a lot of documents that get executed. But I'll take that on notice, and I'll have to provide you with that because we'd have to just look through the types of things that we've been executing. But I wouldn't imagine it's a lot.
So it's not hundreds, it's tens.
Yeah.
Thank you, CEO. That's kind of what I thought. Yeah. Thank you. You don't take it on notice. I think you've answered my question. Thank you. Are there any other questions on agenda items by elected members? Councillor Fletcher.
Thank you. It's an interesting one. It's in relation to item 13, questions on agenda items. I know in times past here we actually ask questions when we bring that motion up and talk about it then before we vote, so we have an informed view. I mean, I've got a list of questions here, but normally we ask them at the time the motion's put forward, and I'm wondering why we can't do that rather than sort of do all the questions in isolation and then think, hold on, what item was that, 18.1 or whatever. So I'm wondering, is there any reason why we cannot be asking questions at the time that the agenda items brought up?
Well, I believe that the standing orders local law allows you to ask questions during the debate, councillor. If the CEO has any other information to add, I'll hand it over to the CEO.
Yeah, I think there is going to be some standardisation around meeting procedures coming out soon. I think in the second half of this year, all local governments will have pretty much a standard set of meeting procedures. These ones are, these standing orders are a little different to ones that I've experienced in that it has this section here, questions on agenda items by elected members. It is written into the standing orders, so we do have to do it as part of the meeting. But my understanding is that you could choose to ask your questions in this section of the meeting, or you could choose to ask them as we go through the particular items. I don't think there's anything that precludes you from doing that in the standing orders.
Thank you, Gary.
Councillor Redmond.
I have a number of questions on different items, and I'm keen to ask them now to reserve my one opportunity to speak during the debate once I've got the information from these questions. My first question I sent through earlier today to Director Radford, and it relates to the financial report, specifically a figure on page 14 of the agenda. It lists employee costs and a variation in that expenditure of in the vicinity of $100,000. The note states that workers' compensation insurance is coming higher by $70,000. Fringe benefits tax accrual is over budget by $5,000, so that's about $75,000 over budget. And it says, in addition, training course expenses are $25,000 below budget year to date. This is likely to be expended by the end of the financial year, which leaves us on balance with about a $50,000 over in the expenditure. So I'm just wondering, that $100,000 figure was a miscalculation, or am I maybe reading the figures wrong? I don't know.
Director?
So, thank you for your question. I have been able to look into this. So, there is a comment that wasn't copied and pasted over into the variances comment. So, there is a timing variance between budgets and actuals of $58,000 for employee leave provisions, and they're usually generally recognised at the end of financial year. So, that makes up the balance up to $108,000.
Thank you. Can I continue? Thank you. My next question relates to the questions from the electors' meeting. We're looking at page 20 of the agenda. Specifically, is motion 3 put forward by Mr. Bevington. So it reads that, in line with the Shire President's announcement in May 2025 regarding the perception the Shire has lost touch with the community, I'm going to summarise that Mr. Bevington asks for dates to be provided for workshops, etc., as per the report in the attachment of the 26th of November council meeting. So basically, the report related to the ceasing of the Q&A sessions, and it stated that there were a number of other consultation opportunities throughout the year. The response to that, the motion put up by Mr. Bevington, was that The report related to the matter of council question and answer sessions and listed a number of options that council has for undertaking community engagement. It was not intended that council would be undertaking all of these methods for engagement. The Shire may conduct community forums, information sessions, precinct or township meetings or workshops when a specific need arises. These activities are not routine and not part of ongoing council engagement. And then it continues on, but that's basically the important bit. So I just want to go back to the actual attachment from the November meeting, justifying the recommendation to cease the Q&A sessions. The attachment said, in addition to community engagement opportunities, in addition to council meetings, the Shire hosts a range of engagement activities throughout the year, including community forums and information sessions, precinct and township meetings, budget and strategic planning workshops, and local events designed to strengthen participation and transparency in council decision making. It says the Shire hosts a range of engagement activities, not they may host. So my question is relating to the way that we communicate Shire activities with the public. We need to be saying what we're going to do and doing what we've said we're going to do, and going forward, how will we ensure that the communications that are put out to the public about opportunities for engaging with Shire are accurate and don't create this kind of confusion where people are maybe perceiving that there are going to be opportunities that sound like that they will happen, we host these opportunities, and later on when they request them, be told that it was just an idea of possibilities.
CEO.
So I think perhaps there's a misinterpretation of the wording, or people have different interpretations about how that particular sentence is structured, and maybe it could be worded a little bit more clearly. But my understanding is they're all things, perhaps bar having a budget workshop that's open to the public. They're all things that the Shire has done at various times in the past and will continue to do as the need arises. So they're all, when you talk about consultation with the community, we do a lot of it, and we do it when it's required. We don't do it when it's probably not required. There's probably some more we can do around hosting some information sessions on particular things. But they are all things that we have done and will do. And I think in the next council meeting, we'll be bringing you an item that relates to place planning for council to have a look at, and that's when we'll start having some of those meetings around precincts and consultation with the community on that particular project. So each project and each program has its own consultation plan around it, and so they're a group of things that we can and would do, but it's not something that we would do if there's no specific reason for doing them. So, I think, when you talk about community forums, they can be small, they can be big, but one of the community forums we had this year was around the BLC. There were when we're doing the review there was invitations sent out to the community to come and attend a forum on what they thought about the about the operations of the BLC. So we do that stuff. It's not always able to be planned out, in an annual program of consultation with the community. But when we're doing specific projects, we would plan it out. And perhaps, as I said, the only one that probably doesn't really belong in there is that we is the one around budget workshops. They're normally done with consultation with elected members. But having said that, there is the potential that prior to adopting the budget, seeing as we don't have an agenda briefing or Q&A session anymore, that we may well choose to do a briefing with council on the budget that's open to the public, that the public can come along to. So, those things are open to us to be doing. So whilst we may not do them all in a particular year, they are all things that we will at some time more than likely do.
If I can just clarify my question a little bit further. So it's not so much around whether or not we do or may do community consultation. My question is it really relates to the clarity of the communication that was put out. So this was in relation to the ceasing of the Q&A sessions, and I